hear next program 5 in the Know Your Body series. Today's program, Feelings, Facts, and Fallacies, deals with female sexuality. The discussion is frank, so you may wish to tune away and rejoin WBAI in about 1 hour. The information in these programs is presented by Judy Graham and Diana Parnes of the Women's Health Forum, a non-profit organization of lay, that is, non-medical women whose goal is making quality medical care and information readily available to all women. In the folio, program number 6 is scheduled for today. However, due to subs days, we've ended up one program behind schedule, so program 6 will hopefully be refolioed for a future date. The programs in this series are actually the audio of a videotape produced for cable TV's public access channel D. So if you live in Manhattan and subscribe to cable TV, you can watch this series on public access channel D on both Sterling and teleprompter at the following times: Tuesdays at 7:30 p.m., Thursdays at 11 p.m., and Fridays at 6 p.m. In addition, the entire series will be re-shown on the cable at the same weekly times for 6 more weeks, beginning Tuesday, December 11th. And now, here are Diana Parnes and Judy Graham.
This is the 5th session of the Know Your Body course, and as you probably know by now, I'm Diana Parnes. And this is Judy Graham. And tonight, the topic we're going to be talking about is sexuality. I don't know necessarily what sexuality is. I don't think Judy does from our discussions. And we wanted to share whatever our impressions are with you, and perhaps we can come up with what our own definition is. We began talking tonight about sexuality by seeing, perhaps like little kids, what does the dictionary say about it? Does it say anything dirty? Does it say anything real? Does it say anything specific? And we looked up sexuality in the dictionary and found that it was just as frustrating as trying to get information about sex in general in society. It didn't say very much. One of the definitions I found was sexuality was the quality or state of being sexual, or that it had to do with sexual activity or interest, especially when excessive. I think, Judy, you had one too, didn't you?
Yeah, I got this one from Funk and Wagner. Sexuality: the state of having or of being distinguished by sex, preoccupation with sex, possession of sexual power.
That's interesting.
That's probably the only thing. Probably the only thing that I could relate to in the whole definition. But there's a lot of talk about the sexual revolution, and mothers and fathers think that their kids are going to run out to the street and jump on anybody that they see walking by. And there's a lot of questions that are being raised, and I would be curious to hear people's reaction on whether or not all of this talk of sexual liberation or sexual revolution has made any difference in your lives, say, within the last 5 years. Whether now that it's supposed to be all right to screw on the first date, is that now something that people do or don't do, or do you think about it, or do you have to do it? Is there really a double standard, and how is that affecting anybody's
That's
life?
That's a lot of questions.
That's a lot of questions. Yeah. Maybe we could get some reactions to.
You know, about the sexual revolution, I remember when the pill first came out, it seemed to me that a great many men who are experts in female behavior, they were convinced this was going to unleash a fantastic wave of promiscuity and nudity across the country, not across the world. And I think for a period of maybe 5 years that some of us did go a little cuckoo with the freedom of, you know, being able to sleep with anyone we wanted to, anytime we wanted to, whereas before we were really inhibited about it because of not so complete protection against conception. But I find personally that I've done a complete turnaround, where I was very promiscuous for 3 years. Like you, I have discovered that I don't want my business in the street. I want my business is private, you know, and it's funny, I guess maybe you need, after being suppressed, I guess it's like being a slave, you don't have any freedom at all for a while as a sexual human being, and then all of a sudden you're given something, and you go crazy because you don't know how to use it, you don't know how to deal with it, and you get a few years of practice, and then you develop a philosophy, maybe, you know, and you experiment.
And you decide for yourself.
Right, and then you decide where you're going to be most comfortable doing what, telling whom, what, and what not. But I think it's very interesting that a lot of men are very critical about birth control methods for women, and especially young women under 18, you know, claiming that it's immoral. I mean, who is anyone to declare whether or not a woman who is able to produce babies should or should not have protection? That's not going to prevent a girl from growing. I mean, that's sort of like punishing.
I think one of the things that interests me is not so much the mechanical disposition of screwing or whatever, but something that Mary Jane Scherfe brought up in her recent book, which kind of is very exciting, and that is the possibilities of women really experiencing their sexuality in the most complete kind of way. What she suggests in her book is never complete, that a woman's orgasm builds on top of each other, so that a woman could have as many as, say, 100 orgasms in, for instance, a whole night of lovemaking or something like that, and that women are literally insatiable, and that somehow I get very excited by that idea. That tells me a lot, not so much that I want to screw forever, but that the quality of lovemaking and the quality and sensitivity of sexuality is much more subtle and much more much deeper than anybody ever realized, and that kind of idea is mind-blowing to me almost.
I think it's important to realize that very little notice is taken of women's sexuality at all,
right,
for years and years and years. And, you know, back to Freud and the whole literature of an equivalent versus vaginal orgasm. I mean, nobody even bothered to really notice what was said, that there was a mature orgasm and an immature orgasm.
Right.
How would a man know that?
Only a man can have a vaginal
orgasm. Well, I mean, what it was the mature one was the vaginal one, which meant that for you to have a mature orgasm, you have to depend on a man to have that. I mean, and that's how for so many years, women really believed that the only way they were going to have an orgasm was to depend on a man for that. And I think the important thing about the liberation is that women really can have their own orgasms with or without men.
What Mary Jane Scherfe was saying was,
I want to go back to what was still on at the sexual revolution and how it affected me, is that I was much more promiscuous before the women's movement because I was trying to be a heterosexual woman, and by sleeping with all of the men that I dated as payment for my dates and all of that, I was bound to hit on the right guy. It never really brought me any closer to them because, for whatever reason, but basically because it was never going, that wasn't my shtick. And I find myself much more selective and much more liberated in that I'm very free. I know now that I have a clitoris, which I never knew before. I know exactly where it is and how to use it and how to, also in terms of men and whether women and men can, I don't have to do anything to get an erection nor to sustain one. It's automatically right there and I can outlast any man I've ever met. And any woman can. I don't know. And I'm not saying this in any kind of a propagandizing or rhetoric way, because I have been on both sides of the head, as it were, fence or whatever. But I would just like to say that in terms of whatever revolution, I am more liberated now, but I was more promiscuous then.
I agree with you. You said that promiscuous before they got involved in the movement, that was both my experience.
And I think the liberation part of it for me has been a feeling of freedom to be and do what I feel is right for me and not be particularly more sexual or less sexual or anything. But I think, like, we may be at one point here, but it's always good to check out where other people are at. And particularly, well, there was a thing in the New York Post yesterday, which I brought to read on Dear Abby's column, which is as follows. Confidential to just a nice girl. The signals the girl sends out are the way she walks, talks, and dresses. Packaging is important. Some girls dress to invite rape, but they are insulted if a fellow winks at them.
Now,
this was in yesterday.
Boy, are they mad at you?
No. This is today also. And, you know, those feelings and those attitudes, I think, are very prevalent. Also, the double standard, or, well, maybe it's not so much double standard, but the use of this liberation against us. You know, well, I thought you were so liberated, you know, why don't you want to go to bed with me?
Right.
That.
When we first talked about the sexual revolution idea, I immediately got very muddled because I thought that over the last 10 years, I have changed enormously sexually from being the thing that really got to me was that I don't really know whether sexual revolution or any kind of popular movement aspect of things had anything to do with me at all, because I was very young. You know, I was 17 when I married, and I had been afraid to sleep with somebody. And I wonder, you know, since we all struggle so personally about these things, if we're not a little beside the point to talk about what the media does in terms of sexual revolutions. I think the one valid thing that any kind of sexual revolution idea ever did was it made possible some people to live together without marrying, without having quite such a big stigma. I think the much more personal sexual stuff for most women has come through the women's movement and through very, very personal discussion and confidence with other women. So that's the real sexual liberation for my
mind. I don't think we can deny the effect of the massive advertising campaigns and the effects of the media on, you know, so-called new women's magazines.
I think part of the problem is that the media creates enormous pressure. It's almost like if we talk about sexual liberation or sexual freedom, we define it for ourselves, but somehow, like, everything the media has taken it over. And I find some of these ads, some of the articles, Cosmopolitan, Family Circle, you know, a lot of these different magazines are saying, how can you be a better lover, as defined, I assume, by a man, rather, you know, how to be better in bed. That somehow is what it becomes, the quote, sexual revolution. How to, you know, develop all the different techniques that you need to somehow please your man or keep him.
It's always the man who has to be pleased. I mean, it's the same thing.
That is why.
That's
why it's sort of gotten away.
How do you deal with it?
I mean, it's hard to define your own sexuality.
I mean, to me, the more pressure, the pressure's come more from friends or from people I meet. You know, it's more close interaction where I realize that I really am limited. I mean, these advertisers I just discarded as readily as I discarded all the others. I mean, just trying to calm me doing something I don't want to do.
But the large percentage of women who don't do that, I mean, that's the hard thing.
I can't avoid
it. We're trying to raise that, too.
I can't avoid it.
Are you susceptible to it?
Yeah.
I mean, do you read Cosmo?
I look to check out the titles.
But the titles are ridiculous.
So?
I still look at it. It's interesting. A lot of people don't blame it. This is one, having an affair when you feel fat. Taking off your clothes can be pure trauma if you're ashamed of your body.
Here's
a way around the problem. And this is a woman writing this. Her advice is, my whole technique is based on one basic rule. Never let him actually see you naked. And she gives you all of this advice of how little glimpses every now and then of a breast or a thigh, but never let him see you.
We can sit here and say, well, that's bullshit, you know, but we have achieved in our personal lives, which is why we're here, you know, a certain ability to look at things that way and see that ad is bullshit and see that the media puts in bullshit. But what about some woman who really, and And even though I think of myself as being somewhat liberated, though I hate the word in the application to myself because I'm really not personally, but I mean, even in my worst moments when I think of myself as being horrible, I know I'm not horrible. But what about a woman who reads an article like that, who sees all around her photographs of beautiful, slim models, right? You know, how is, I mean, what is this input doing to her? It's like crippling her. You know, and I think it's very easy for us to say, well, that's bullshit in the media and blah, blah, blah.
I know myself, if I don't feel pretty and feel nice, sex is not that great for me. I have to feel good about myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember, just a few minutes ago, she said something about Dear Abby was, and I remember as a kid in New York here, there was like a little ditty in Spanish that went, si cocinas como caminas, yo me como hasta la raza, which means that if you cook the way you walk, or if you walk the way you cook, I'll eat even the scraping. But like, this is sexual revolution for me. Like, I've been going through a lot of changes with chauvinistic Puerto Ricans, you know, like I'm called from everything from promiscuous to oversex to everything in the book simply because I refuse to be a slam, bam, thank you, ma'am. You know, I'm very mixed up right now as far as sex is concerned. I'm not as young, like the lady said here, as most of the people here, but I've been through a lot of changes from not letting my body be seen, from going to fat and feeling ugly and trying to hide it, to trying to find somebody who'll grab it. So now I don't even want to give it away.
But at least you're looking for what you want rather than what someone else wants you to be.
For what I want.
Instead of just saying, you know, I'm going to accept anything that's handed out because I'm not. It's, you know, what I want now. And that's one of the things that I'm glad about this sexual revolution that has worked for me.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that a lot of us as women have been oppressed for so long. It's a tough struggle to break out of that and find what suits our individual tastes and needs. And I was very susceptible to Madison Avenue type advertising about you have to do this to look beautiful, you have to do that, you know, you have to wear a girdle. I remember weighing 84 pounds and wearing a girdle and stockings and a really sashayed bra, all 31 inches of between heels. You know, I mean, the thing is, sexuality isn't on the outside, it's on the inside.
Right.
And, you know, this crap that men hand out via advertising that you have to have soulful eyes to attract your soul mate, you know, or, you know, wear a handsome gown and you're this for life, and, you know, all this nonsense. It's all based on superficiality and based on, I think, an antique model about what is womanly.
Mm-hmm. And the garments
what is womanly actually is non-sexist, because it's being free in yourself, being, as the French say, comfortable in your own skin, and feeling free. And the whole idea of sexuality, like, you know, it's really medieval, because men still speak of a woman's sexual power. They're like, it's some kind of witchcraft, some kind of voodoo, you know,
away from
I hate her, but I can't stay away from her type of thing. You know,
have you ever had anyone say to you, well, women are mysterious, women must be mysterious?
Yeah.
A lot of women believe in me. One thing, just talking about believing all this stuff, like, I still have a problem with really appreciating my hairy legs. I mean, it's like, it's really something I have to keep working. Even though I know that that's the way I am and natural and I feel good that I am that way, to accept it. I mean, it's all right when I wear pants, but if I wear nylons or a dress or something, I still have that old image of when we used to laugh at women when I was in high school who had all this matty hair, you know, in the over the
under the nylons, and used to think, oh, that's awful. So that still believing all of that about clean-shaven legs and all the depilatories and things like that is really a big, it's still a part of me.
Clean armpits.
Yeah. I don't worry about my armpits anymore. It's still my legs. I'm on my legs now.
Yeah. We have a couple of poems that we want to read.
We've been talking, as you said, about what the media thinks. I'd like to give you some views of what one woman thought about men's attitudes toward sexuality or toward women, perhaps. One is a poem addressed to men. It was another thing a few years ago where I was asking men that I knew what it felt like to have an erection. All of a sudden it occurred to me this was a completely different feeling than anything I had ever experienced or would experience. And one or two people wrote poems on it. And a friend of mine wrote a poem in response to these poems, which I think you'll enjoy. It's called On an Erection. It must be something, like a Maserati through the Holland Tunnel at dawn on Sunday, 140 miles per hour and sunlight ahead. All dressed up and no place to go. The woman, by the way, is Anne-Marie Micklow, who wrote that. And she also wrote another poem addressed to some problems with male-female relationships. And this is called Intimacy and Other Perversions. You use your toothbrush? This one? You only have just this one? You don't have another I could use instead? Oh, Christ, what the fuck did I get into this time? Christ knows how many others. Ah, no, it's not that I expect your toothbrush to be virgin at your age and all. It's only, hell, you look like a pretty straight type of chick. I mean, I take you home and all of a sudden you pull this shit. Fucking's one thing. I don't mind fucking, but using your goddamn toothbrush? For Christ's sake, she expects me to marry you too? I come home with her and already she wants me to use her goddamn toothbrush? She must let every guy in town use the goddamn toothbrush. And I'm not supposed to. The others. Christ, what a sucker I am. They must be lined up around the block waiting for me to leave. Do they take her toothbrush willingly in their mouths? And savor every stroke, stroke thoroughly, enjoying every tonguing, sliding, wet pink surface, not even bother, ah Christ, to rinse? Or is it the old finger job for them, the superficial, tasty flick to cover up? Ah Christ, you must be one hell of a sick kind of when every guy like that expect me to even get a freaking gum disease and explain, I'm no prude. I know you whores don't, nothing. Disgusting. Ah, Christ. Ah, Christ. I thought you would enjoy it. Anyway, we've talked so much about our reactions. I mean, what do we feel about ourselves? How do we feel about our bodies? I mean, what is really, you know, how, someone mentioned, I think, that feeling good about your body or parts of your body or your body as a whole or the way the whole thing, you know, moves, the way you relate to yourself. I'm wondering if some people can say, you know, what it is that really excites you and makes you feel good about your body.
Silence.
Or what do you not feel so comfortable about, perhaps? Yeah.
I find it hard to separate my body from my head and my feelings. And like, if I really do good work...
Well, I mean about yourself.
But that's what I mean.
Okay.
That I like my body. If I like what I'm thinking and I like what I'm doing, then I like my body. And it's not separated. I mean, my body really isn't separated from the way I function in the world. And if people are laughing, you know, like if men are joking or, you know, on the street or this or that or the other thing, I don't feel so great, so I want to, you know, inhibit myself. It's sort of related, directly related to how I am responding to as a person.
Yeah. That's great if you feel that way, but I know whether I feel good about my head or not, I know I hate my ass.
Well, you know, I find that I'm still susceptible to the
preconceived image of the American silk, you know, who has an 8-inch waistline, a 58-inch bust, and 32-inch hips, you know. And I discovered that where I used to be very promiscuous, and if there's a great sexual attraction between myself and a man that I was seeing, you know, just very recently, you know, I would just fall into bed without thinking about it. And now I've gone the other way, where I find that it's much more enjoyable to get to know a man first. I've discovered, after a long road of trial and error, that, you know, the so-called Victorian attitude has a lot to do with comfortable feelings about yourself, well, myself anyway, in that I find that I can't go to bed and not get emotionally involved anymore. You know, I can't go through sex with sex, you know, the act for the sake of the act. And I mean, for me, it was a process of buying warmth and love, even though it was on a temporary basis. And it just doesn't work, because I just found that I got more and more depressed, and I felt emptier and emptier, and I felt like I'd been cheated or robbed, you know, every time I did this. So I discovered recently that it's much more enjoyable for myself and the person I'm relating to just to spend a long period of time, you know, it could be a month, 2 months, even 6 months, to get to know a person. And you can really check out the real, I don't want to use the word motives of a person, but I guess that's the best word I can come up with. But to really get to understand someone that you're relating to, and it's easier to go to bed and with someone you really know and care about, and wake up in the morning and smile and joke and laugh. Whereas before, you know, I'd go out on a blind date or something, and I'd get up in the morning and I wouldn't know what to say. And it's the most embarrassing thing in the world to be sexually intimate with someone the night before, and to get up in the morning and have breakfast and sit there blushing because you don't know what to talk about.
Or even to think that you should say anything.
Yeah.
I mean, to say, what are you supposed to say? Thank you, or,
or I hate you, or what am I doing here?
Right. Yeah, and guess what? You got
before you go.
So what do you think it means to separate so much feelings and emotions from love? I mean, do you think that's something that men supposedly do, or men are taught to do and women are not, which is something that, you know, is not generally true for women, or something that women who are involved with men have, you know, somehow learned to do to cut off part of themselves? I mean, I find it something that I can't do. I cannot separate out how I feel about someone from going to bed with them.
I think that's something that we are all taught to do constantly, and one of my senses is that...
Excuse me, you mean to separate.
To separate those things, uh-huh. and that's something that's kind of laid on men as though they're the only ones who do it, and I certainly know that I've done it most of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel, on the other hand, a kind of a very innocent sort of feeling that... when I make love with somebody, I do usually make a very real connection. And I think what happens, even if it's someone I don't particularly know very well, I think what happens is that a withdrawal takes place very shortly after that happens. And, you know, if there's a strained conversation, or if it turns out you don't want to know the other person or whatever, that's kind of just pushed aside and forgotten.